Elizabeth Evans, and I'm a homeschooling mom of four young kids. I'm figuring this out as I go, but I'm here to talk to Bonnie, who has been writing and speaking on the subject for over a decade and has been homeschooling for three decades.
My name's Bonnie Landry. I've got seven kids. They're ages 13 to 33. I've been homeschooling for 29 years. I'm a wife, a mom, a grandma. I'm a speaker and a writer, and I'm an advocate of joy. So we're here to provide this podcast so that homeschooling can look like you imagined it to be.
Hello.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Exciting. I look so forward excited to this. Always.
I'm so glad. Yeah, me too. I'm pretty pumped, especially because we're gaining traction. There's
right
listening, so it's
yeah
great.
Yeah. Thank you to all who've listened and are continuing to listen. So this week we've finally been able to filter through people who have sent in questions. And one thing I think we forgot to mention is when you send questions, if you could let us know if you want to be named on air, so to speak, if you want credit to your name for these questions.
Because thinking up a good question is a skill.
That's right.
You should have some notoriety.
Yeah, if you want a little bit of fandom, like, hey, I heard your name. Our first question is, how do you decide what to cover each year? And do you let your kids have input?
Okay. This is a good question. I'll start with the second question and move to the first one. Do I let my kids have input? Yes, I do, all the time. And I let them have input from sort of the small decisions that we make. What are we going to choose for dictation? How would you, like to run this science experiment? What would you like to do today for writing? Mm-hmm. I had lots and lots of input for my kids, for sure, right from when they're quite small. When it comes to choosing a year, like what we do for the year, then yes, I also get input from the kids. And of course, with multiple kids, you're going to have multiple opinions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so sometimes ultimately the decision is mine, but I certainly want to hear from them. What interests you, right? Are you interested in doing the Middle Ages? We did it 4 or 5 years ago, but would you like to do it again? And younger kids who might remember doing some of that, are going to have a remembrance of that. Oh yeah, I'd like to reread some of those books, or I remember the kids doing that and it seemed like lots of fun and I'd like to revisit that. So what tends to happen when you're homeschooling, now some programs have a system where they cycle through certain subjects in a year, okay? So say social studies, for example, they're going to cycle through, they start with ancient history, they move on to medieval history, they move on to modern history, or Renaissance history as its own study, then modern history. They might just study the world wars, you sort of do a cycle. But what you end up doing if you homeschool for a number of years, you repeat those things. So even if you have the same child homeschooling for, 15 years, it's a guarantee. There's only a certain amount of big blocks of history. There's a guarantee you're going to cycle through those more than one time. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, just restate the first question so that I can just make sure I'm answering the right question.
Okay. How do you decide what to cover each year?
Right. Okay. So that decision for us is largely over the years been interest based.
Okay.
And interest tends to build via what you have previously studied. Okay. For example, when we very first started, we were studying the Middle Ages, and the books we were reading would refer to the fall of Rome. Okay. As the Middle Ages, sort of the marking point being, the fall of Rome was the beginning of the Middle Ages. And so my daughter asked this question, of course, a couple of times throughout the year. Well, why did Rome fall? Mm-hmm. And so, after our Middle Ages study, I said, well, let's look at that. Why don't we study the Roman Empire? So it naturally led into it. And often historical periods, that will happen. It's interest-based. Some people like to sort of do a cycle so that they're doing ancient history, they're doing Middle Ages, they're doing modern history. And either one works, but it was kind of fun to work backwards too, because they would hear about a historical period and sort of move back. into the previous historical period because some interest has been created, right? Yeah. They're speaking Latin, the language of the Romans. And so why is that? Why is the language of the church the language of that came from the Romans? Why are we doing that? You know, so to have right. sort of an understanding of that. So for me, I kind of like to just pick a big idea, mm-hmm. right? What we're going to study this year for science, what we're going to study this year for social studies, and see where it goes, right? Okay. So my process of discerning what we're going to study is going to involve a lot of conversation with my kids. And again, ultimately, I'm probably going to be the one who sort of says, okay, well, let's do the Roman Empire this year and let's do study, you know, Egypt and Greece next year. Okay, we'll cover both those things. Or for the first half of the year, let's do this. And for the second half year, let's do this. You know, and whenever you're choosing something to study, you always have the option of choosing it for a short time or a long time.
Right.
Okay. So if you had very small children, to spend an entire school year on one topic might be difficult if they're not really engaged. Mm-hmm. Okay, say for example, you were stepping into Canadian history or American history for the first time. It might not hold their attention. But that's kind of what education really does anyways, right? When we introduce topics to kids, we sort of introduce it at a sort of a surface level. In the next year or the next couple of years, we scratch a little deeper and we scratch mm-hmm. a little deeper until eventually, you know, you're scratching as deep as the child is able to do so.
Yeah.
So, you know, we always have the option of choosing to cover, say, 3 or 4 historical periods in a year and kind of gloss over them and delve into them deeper as the kids get a little older as well.
Yeah.
Right.
That's great.
Yeah. So does that... Do you think that answers the question adequately? Or are we?
Yeah. Well, okay. What about, so that kind of covers history, but what about other subjects? How do you know?
Right. There's other subjects. Right. Of course. So the subjects that really matter in terms of what order you learn them in, obviously there's an order to math, right? You have mm-hmm. to learn math in a certain order to make it make sense. Language arts, to some degree, you have to learn to read before you can learn grammar and spelling mm-hmm. and punctuation. Mm-hmm. You have to learn all those things before you can really learn writing.
Right.
So, you know, there's sort of distinct patterns in some subject areas. And so that I would reach out to direction in those subject areas. I would reach out for direction, like even if I wasn't using a textbook for math, if I wondered what I was supposed to do next, I would definitely be looking at a math text. You know, okay, well, they can add and subtract fluently. So now what do I do?
Right.
Okay. Or how do I introduce fractions? I would look at a math book to see what they're going to cover in a year, even if I actually wasn't using the text to teach with.
Okay.
Because I want to have a basic idea of where we're going with that. There are some subjects as well, like math, that are going to be more individual. This is what this child needs this year. This is what we're going to do as a family this year. So those are really two different decisions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what am I going to learn, teach with my child? So say that, if I can break that down for a minute, say the one-on-one type subject. So math and language have worked really well as one-on-one subjects in my family. So those are the things where I would be looking at that particular child right. and saying, okay, where do you need to go from here? What's working for you? What isn't working for you? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times this is where a community is really important. So you have actual people you can talk to, and sometimes there's a Facebook community, but you can also just develop your own, you know, live in the flesh community of, you know, what worked for your child. My child isn't really understanding this math program I've been using. Do you have some suggestions? And somebody might say, oh, well, for a tactile learner, this is a much better program. Mm-hmm. So those are individual per child decisions. And also, what aspect of language arts am I going to do with this child? So those are topics that I'm going to address per child.
Right.
Okay. For language arts, I'm just going to take a look at what the child already knows. Okay. Because I work with them one-on-one, and this can be confusing, I think, sometimes when people are just starting out homeschooling or they're thinking about homeschooling and they're not in it yet.
Yeah.
You know what your child knows because you're working with them every day. Mm-hmm. right? So it's not confusing as though they were in school for 3 years and then you pulled them out and you had to figure out where they were at. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to then determine where they're at and work from there. Okay. Well, they're a pretty good reader, but their punctuation is lacking. So we're going to work on punctuation this year. While we're doing dictation, I'm going to kind of focus on punctuation as we go along.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And then of course, those big family decisions that I was already referring to, science and social studies. If you're studying art, if you're studying, anything that would be a sort of an enrichment type topic, music history, anything like that, it doesn't really matter in what order you teach those things. Mm-hmm. Social studies, it doesn't really matter in what order you teach those things. Every time you teach it, they're going to take in more information.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I have so many questions just from what you said.
That's good. Yeah. Bring those forward. Cause if you do, somebody else does too.
Right. Okay. So, I do recall that somebody had asked about mentoring. Based on what you just said, do you recommend somebody would find a mentor? You said a group of people to kind of bounce ideas off of. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think as human beings, we really at all times in our life need to be being mentored. Mm-hmm. And I think we also need to be mentoring others.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And we need to have peers that are kind of in the same place as us. So that in terms of just living a balanced life, right. Yeah, we should always have mentors. We should always be mentoring. Even if you think you don't have a lot to offer someone else, you know, there's somebody who say, you know, in your case, who's just starting to have kids and they're dealing with toddlers and they're dealing with sibling rivalry. You know, you have something to offer them mm-hmm. because you've lived through it already for, you know, 8 or 9 years. So that's something that you've already done. So you can mentor others. And mostly what we need from mentoring is to know that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Most of us as human beings need to know, is this normal? Is this going to be okay? And absolutely a good friend who is further ahead on the, the timeline of parenting than you're, the timeline of life or the timeline of, you know, growth in your faith even. Mm-hmm. Those are things that we should always have in our life. And I would think we would have mentors on different levels, but for sure homeschooling, we need that. And if you don't have mentors, you know, you can find them via Facebook, you can find them via social media sometimes. You know, I mean, always live is better, but I think it's one of the things that I've realized, you know, I've been very sort of anti-technology most of my life, but I've realized there is actually a place for this because you can't always find a live person, and to feel unsupported in the journey is a really difficult thing to do, to go it alone, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So if you can find peers and mentors online, you know, and just put it out there to people. Sometimes, you know, I have people often just email me a question and say, you know, I hope I'm not bothering you. And I hope you don't mind me asking these questions, you know, but at this point in my life, I do have time to answer those questions. If I didn't, I would say, I will answer these questions, but I'll try and point you in a direction that maybe somebody who has a little more time for you right now. I'm still in the thick of it, but I'll, you know, say, hey, listen, I've got time to answer your questions. I'm delighted to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it might be, I'll just shoot them a couple of blog posts where I've dealt with that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, find your mentors for sure. And find your peers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then another thing you just mentioned was how, you've kind of, disliked technology I'm kind of the same way. One thing that I have fought against is using, I guess, learning apps for my kids. Like we have an iPad, the kids never use it because
yeah.
I think I've read studies that show, you know, with kids tracing letters on iPads, it's different. You know, I was a Montessori kid and tracing in sand is
right.
There, that tactile is so important. But I also don't want to write off apps if parents are really seeing that it's working for their kids. So
yeah.
Have you heard of any apps that really, really do a good job helping teach kids and it really does stick?
You know. Yeah, well, I'm late to the party, so I'm probably not the best person to answer that particular question, because mm-hmm. I'm very late to the party on technology, and I was very you know, sort of app averse.
Yeah.
Right. The one thing that my kids did use technology for as they were getting older was typing. Right. Because I mean, how else do you learn typing? Right. And, you know, get an old electric typewriter, probably not, you know, no, use a keyboard and use a game because that's fun. Right.
Right.
Typing and also learning a language. So we use Duolingo quite a bit. Okay. And I found Duolingo very effective. I don't know for younger kids, because definitely technology would be something that I would address quite a bit later in the whole school journey. I do. I'm very appreciative of the tactile nature of sand and noodles and, you know, all those things and sitting down with the child on your lap. But, you know, there are things like my daughter has an app that is, she uses with her son, that's the, like a night sky, right? So I guess, I don't exactly know how the app works, but it will show you the constellations and you can look for them. Right? On the night sky. Yeah. I have a plant identification app. There must be other identification apps, like bug identification apps and tree identification apps and stuff.
We use one for birds.
Okay. So I would have loved that with my kids, because going out on a nature walk and having my phone with me and just, you know, saying, because by the time you've gotten back, you know, to your house, you can't remember what the thing looked like, right?
Unless
you sat there and sketched it, which I did not have time to do.
Right.
You know, so that kind of thing I can see really being a benefit for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. Sometimes table apps we introduced a little later on. That was something I was okay with. You know, it was the hours in front of a screen or the inability to move from screen to real life that I just felt very sensitive about, that that's something I really wanted to avoid with my kids, was this sort of screen mentality.
Right. Yeah.
You know, that if it's not on the screen, I'm not really interested, you know, and I think we pretty neatly avoided that. Right.
Yeah.
So,
No.
So I'll ask my daughters if they found some apps. No, their kids are just getting to school age.
Okay.
Now sort of thing. So that oldest, both of them have oldest, that just are on the brink of four.
Okay.
So,
Yeah.
How about you? Have you found apps for your kids at all? Other than Bird ID?
I haven't really even looked. I guess I'm just, our oldest has ADHD. So we have to be really careful with how much screen time he has. We do a family movie night once a week. And sometimes on rainy days, we'll, you know, watch a movie, but we really limit it, because otherwise he just builds up too much energy and he's not good at releasing it. With, you know, and we live in Michigan, so for 6 months out of the year, it's kind of hard to go outside.
I hear you. Okay. Gotcha. So yeah, I mean, that's a consideration too, right?
Yeah.
So, but I'll ask around for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Some moms might be wondering.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to go back to talking about history. I love history. And so we had somebody write in and wonder, what order do you go in for history? Because I personally have heard two schools of thoughts where you start, you either one, start at the very beginning of history, you know, Adam and Eve, and then work your way to now. And then the other school of thought would be to start with whatever is relevant to your child's world. So in here in the States, it would be start with American history, or for you, Canadian history.
Mm-hmm.
So what have you heard? What do you find?
Well, okay, so this is a very sort of age appropriate kind of question. Okay. So when really social studies, if you think about sort of the big picture of what is social studies? So social studies is the study of the human interactions, right? Mm-hmm. That fills out, you know, in many different ways and at many different levels, depending on the age of the child and their ability to comprehend things.
Right.
So really social studies begins with my own personal history. I am so-and-so. These are my parents. This is my family. These are my grandparents. My grandparents came from some other parents. Maybe they came from another country. Right. You know, so it really starts off with the person, right? And moves out from there. Mm-hmm. So I think more important than the sort of in what era do we start, I think it's in what proximity to the individual do we start.
Okay.
And so for us, you know, with little kids, that's just a normal part of your conversation. It's certainly not something you need a program for.
Right.
Who am I? Who is my family? What is my culture? What is my neighborhood? Where did I come from? Mm-hmm. What people have I extended? Mm-hmm. Right. So, to understand from what culture you came is really important, to understand your own little bubble in a sense. Mm-hmm. Right. And so when I'm not as concerned about doing the eras in a particular order. Okay. To me, what's important is that in an age appropriate way, my first questions as my kids got older, say, for example, we were studying a historical period. The very first questions I'm going to ask, and I'm going to continue, even when I have older kids, I'm going to always ask these kinds of questions, is what was their life like? Mm-hmm. How did those people live? What did they eat? That's very personal to a child. You know, what did they eat? Because if they ate weird stuff, that's kind of interesting and gross, right?
Yeah.
What did they eat? How did they play? Mm-hmm. Who did they visit? Did they know their grandparents? Who were the kids in their neighborhood? How did they get to church? Those kinds of very culturally appropriate questions to ask a small child, because suddenly then they can have a relationship with the children of that time period.
Yeah.
What were their mothers and fathers like? Did their mothers and fathers actually raise them on the day to day? What was the rich people's life like compared to the poor people of that era? So those are, to me, really culturally significant questions and where we sort of start from. And as kids get older, and this is one of the things we have to address when we have a big age range of kids, you're going to continue asking those culturally significant questions, and you're going to expand on them with older kids as you're also going to expand on information. Okay. What happened when, why did it happen? What did that look like for those people? How did that affect their daily life? What were the politics of the day? What was the religious and philosophical thought of the day? So you're really expanding out from there. Okay. But those things can be handled at the same time too. So those bigger questions, those bigger historical questions of information, can be handled at the same time as the cultural milieu of the day sort of thing.
Okay.
Right.
Have you heard of the story of the world?
Mm-hmm. Curriculum? Yeah. Yes.
That's what we use. And my son loves it. He just eats it up.
Yeah.
And
I think what we do is very similar to Story of the World.
Yeah.
In a sense, I've gotten that impression that I've listened to a little bit of it, but I think that's kind of how we operate. And, using historical fiction in particular is just so valuable to put kids in history and help them understand history.
Right.
And help them love it, help them to love it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought of it because as you were talking about relating and what did a child do or, eat and all that, that's exactly how the Story of the World book begins. It's putting you in a child's shoes, and it talks about archaeology and how somebody, hundreds of years later will start to dig up something and find maybe a toy that a child had left out.
Yeah.
Or rain, it's really cool how, you just kind of get into that mindset and hear about fables that they would tell. And
Exactly. I wrote a little tiny book. One of my little tiny booklets, is called How to Read a Book So It Becomes the Curriculum. Mm-hmm. And that really was pretty foundational book for me to write, to kind of write it all down so I could sort of get the ideas down clearly. But it's what we had naturally been doing, is what is it you need to have in order to bring history to life? What environment needs to be in your home and in your mindset in order to bring history to life, right? Because I hated history. I hated it in school. I hated social studies. It was just, to me, it was all so random. It was all so, what's the word I'm thinking of? Sort of disjointed, mm-hmm. Because it lacked continuity. And so, one year we would study X and one year we would study X, but it was a different teacher. It was a different class. There was no relating it to what we previously had learned.
Right.
And there wasn't a story to it. It was mostly facts. And so, I think we've come a long way you know, since that sort of thing too.
Maybe. I mean, when I was in grade school and high school, I felt like they would just do the same thing every year. It's like every year. And because one of the things that I always wanted to learn about was World War II history.
Right.
And we'd never get there because we'd spend, you know, the beginning of the year, we'd kind of start all over again. And by the time the end of the year rolled around, we wouldn't really get to, you know, World War II. And
right. And that's what we've just finished studying the World Wars. So
yeah.
It's been a super fun study. And there's so much historical fiction. That would be a really cool idea to do as a live talk.
Well,
so can I explore that idea right now and just sort of put it out there to people?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. So we had this idea to do some live events. So there would be a live Zoom event where we address different topics, and it would be a paid event. It would include like a book and some study materials and whatnot that would be different than this podcast, but sort of an offshoot of it, sort of an hour's talk and then an hour of question and answer. And so look to our next podcast and we'll pick a date and put some information out about that. But one of the things we talked about would be, you know, resources for particular studies that you want to do. I think that would be really neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not sure what age this would be, for sure high school, but the Band of Brothers book by Stephen Ambrose.
Okay.
Phenomenal. It's been a while since I've read it, so I'd have to see how appropriate it is. But I mean, most high school kids could handle something like that.
Yeah. Well, in our family, age appropriateness didn't really come into the picture. If a book had some inappropriate stuff, I just edited as I read aloud.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, unless it was really horrible. I did read one book that was actually really horrible to my kids and I had to edit out so much. It was just ridiculous. Like entire swaths of pages. It was just gratuitous, inappropriate stuff. But,
right,
you know, there was some good information in the book. But, it, you know, looking back, I wish I had previewed it better. There's less review sites for books than there are for movies, right? So that's one of the books. You don't always know. So, anyways, one of the books I had to edit a lot, but I read above my kids' age level a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. And so if I'm reading to high schoolers, I often pick high school oriented books, and the younger kids, they just take in what they take in.
Right.
You know, and I try to find a balance, maybe the next novel we read, sort of an easier read, but it's amazing what they pick up. And I always think you can just stop and explain things too, right? Okay. What they mean by that is blah. And, you know, so you can qualify things for your kids or provide some context if you need to, but you know, I just don't see, age appropriateness when you're reading aloud. It plays out differently than it does if you're giving a book, to your child to read. You know, you want it to be more within their reach,
right?
You know, but if you're reading aloud, you can treat the subject a bit differently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, well, my son, he's a really good reader. He's 8, but he loves graphic novels. So I don't know if you've heard of the Tintin books.
Yes. My kids love Tintin. Yeah.
Yeah. So he loves Tintin. So I happened upon a graphic novel that is history based, and I'm forgetting the author, but the first one is called One Dead Spy, and it kind of puts, are you familiar?
Yeah, no, put it in the show notes. Remind me. We'll put it in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah. And he just loves it, and he'll read it aloud to his brothers. And
no, that's awesome.
Because they put kind of a humorous spin on it, but I think it's Revolutionary War time. I'll have to check on that. Yeah, but they just love it.
We found a little series of graphic novels for Shakespeare plays, you know, which was, that was cool. I don't like to read graphic novels, you know, so I'm going to read them the play, but they can read the graphic novel themselves to just have some context, right? So, you know, to make it a bit more fun and be a quick read, then they have an idea of where the story goes, right?
Yeah.
So we had Julius Caesar and Macbeth both as graphic novels, which was kind of fun.
Yeah. I think there's a kid's book that it's a graphic novel of Shakespeare's play. I wonder if it's the same one.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can put that in the show notes as well. So we can talk about that. And, because that's a neat thing, especially for boys. I think boys are drawn to them. Yeah.
Yeah.
My daughters weren't quite as into Tintin and, those kinds of novels. There's another one. There's Tintin and another one, Asterix and Obelix.
Okay.
Do you have those ones?
No.
Okay. Yeah, another graphic novel style.
I'm not a huge fan of the graphic novels, but I mean, yeah, my sons love them. They love Calvin and Hobbes and
Yeah, I don't find they're fun to read. So that's something they can read on their own. And for some kids, that's a great start. Like if they're not kind of reluctant readers,
sometimes
a graphic novel will be just the ticket to kind of get them moving, right?
Yeah. And there are some good ones because we have one graphic novels for the Saints. There's there's a series, I think there are four, and they each have four stories of the Saints, and they're all illustrated by different people. So you see different illustrations, and I'll put those in the show notes also.
Okay, great. Yeah, just send me a link. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a perfect segue into our next question.
Okay.
Which is, as you know, reading aloud is probably the number one thing in a homeschool family's home.
Yes, for sure.
Should there be any preparation? So, for example, if we decide to read Charlotte's Web, should we gather resources and information and kind of form a lesson for each child around that, or just read?
Okay. Do we have a couple of minutes to start? Can I share a story about that?
Yeah.
Okay. So this idea of reading aloud and developing a lesson plan, for me, you know, the book, Are You My Mother?
Yeah.
Okay. So when I had my first daughter, I thought, okay, we were on, you know, she read it, like we read it 10 times a day. You know, it was that book that she just kept bringing back and back and back to me, you know, and kids go through phases like that. And so after a couple of days of her reading it, bringing it to me several times a day, I thought, oh, you know what? I just had a great idea. We're going to do a little science project on this. And we will study reproduction and how a chick gets out of the egg, right? Mm-hmm. And that will be really cool. So I was super excited about this because this was sort of my first step into doing something kind of organized with my daughter.
Yeah.
Okay. So I went to the library, like by myself, I went to the library. I got some resources. I, you know, gathered up whatever I had to develop a little lesson plan for what I was going to do. And I was very excited about that. And there's nothing wrong with that. Okay. Don't get me wrong, but I'll just sort of tell you what happened so you can get an idea of why I do what I do now. Prepare this lesson plan. And so then once I had all my things prepared after a couple of days, the next time she brought me the book and I said, oh, you know what? I got a really good book from the library about how a chick gets out of the egg. Would you like to read it? And she said, well, maybe, but what I'd really like to know is how a bird builds a nest. And I said, and I'm sort of like a little bit crestfallen, like, oh shoot. Okay. How do I move her from that idea to my idea. Uh-huh. And I said, oh, but it's, you know, it's fascinating. You know, the chick has a little special thing on the end of its beak to help it peck on the egg. And it takes sometimes a really long time for the chick to get out of the egg. Would you like to read the book? And she said, do you have any books on how the bird builds? And I was like, okay. So sort of, I felt myself getting angsty, you know, like I prepared for this and you're not really showing the interest that I had hoped you would show in this topic. And it's kind of bugging me.
Yeah.
So at some point I thought, okay, this isn't good. Like this isn't good for me to feel this angst. And what can I do about that? You know, what can I do about that? Because I prepared for this and maybe I need to rethink my approach on this because right now what she's really excited about is how birds build nests. Okay. And I thought, I need a set of encyclopedias. And so that's when I bought my first set of encyclopedias because I thought, I want to capitalize on what the kids are interested in right now. I think that's the best way we can learn. So when I'm reading a book to my kids, basically we're in the encyclopedias all the time. Mm-hmm. So a topic comes up, you know, oh, I wonder how they build their nest. So that goes right from the storybook to the novel, right? I wonder how a bird builds a nest. And we could maybe one day we spend all our day looking about nests. Maybe we do that for 5 days in a row, mm-hmm. right? Maybe we go out and find nests of different kinds of animals. Maybe we try or different kinds of birds. Maybe we try and identify those nests. Maybe we know somebody who has a nest collection and we can go talk to them about their nests and have a look at real nests. You know, maybe we buy a bird ID book and we can look at the different kinds of birds and where they nest and how they nest. You know, that could be a one-day study or it could be a whole year long study.
Right.
Starting from where do the birds build their nest. Now, probably what's going to happen is at some point, when you start talking about how that bird lines its nest for its eggs and prepares for its baby, suddenly the child is then going to say, oh, didn't you have a book about how the baby birds get out of the egg? Right. And suddenly then it's relevant and real. And that's amazing. So the more you can do, prepare for whatever comes up in the story. Right. And that's where an encyclopedia is such a beautiful resource, because, and I'm a really, really big advocate of reading aloud and having a set of encyclopedias, so that your kid can go and you can go and look things up in context, in a relevant way, in a quick sort of just alphabetical manner. You can go to the library. You can say to your child, okay, we'll get a book on from the library on that, but it might not be till the next day or till the next week. And you kind of have lost the moment, right?
Yeah.
Where in the momentum of the asking of why, you can get them the quick answer or the big, big, big answer, right? And if it looks like it's going to be a several days study or a few weeks study, get all the books you can out of the library and capitalize on that. So to sort of bring Charlotte's Web into that program, yeah, absolutely. You could do some prep work, you know, where do they live? Where do they, you know, how does a farm run? What kind of farm is this? There's some prep work you could do, but if you have lots of maps and a globe and, you know, some timelines and some understanding, and you can say, oh, look, they lived in this state. You know, that's in the Midwest. You know, oh, look how far that is from where we live. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, when was this? Oh, that was when Grandpa was a little boy. You know, that happened at the same time that our grandpa was a little boy right here. Yeah. And, you know, so I tend to prefer to see where things go. I really love that process, you know, and it's a little bit hard to let go sometimes of the developing of lesson plans. And I don't think, again, lesson plans aren't a bad thing. They're just, if they're going to hem you in, right, you have to be aware of what that's doing to you and your own sort of attitude about what learning actually is. So you know, do I lesson plan? No, not at all, really.
And I think, because we don't have encyclopedias, I have a couple. I have the Usborne geography, history, and what's the other one? There are three encyclopedias, so I have those. And then this year we purchased a set of I'll have to put that in the show notes, but it's a set of anatomy books, but it's farm anatomy. And I think food anatomy. And then the other one has to do with plants. And I'm sorry for anybody who knows what I'm talking about. And I'm just totally butchering the name, but,
Yeah, that's okay. We can look it up. We can Google it too.
Right. Yeah. But they're great. And the artwork in it, it's like all hand drawn stuff, which I judge books by covers.
Oh yeah.
So I look for the good illustrations personally.
Oh yeah. I've got some, not tons, but on my Pinterest page, I've got some posters of sort of hand-drawn, you know, plant species and things like that, that I just thought would be of interest to homeschoolers if people are interested. I think we might have to wrap up soon, but if I can say one thing about the encyclopedias before we go off here, one of the things that I found is that encyclopedias are expensive. Okay. So you'll probably pay, you know, $1,000 to $1,500 for a set of brand new 2020 encyclopedias. Okay. But if you go back a year or two, we use World Book. I really like them. And I, to the best of my knowledge, World Book is the only company still making a hard cover set of encyclopedias that you can get.
Okay.
You know, and I think that online encyclopedias have their place. That's another topic for another time. But if you go back a couple years, they will be half the price or less. So for $500 or $600, you can get a set of encyclopedias. Sometimes you can get them from libraries, like maybe they're 5 years old or 4 years old. You could get a 20-year-old set of encyclopedias, and they would still be really valuable to you, because by the time the kids are in high school, those online encyclopedias are a good place to go. They're less, you know, it's going to send you down rabbit holes and whatnot, you know, or they can be Googling things. But for young kids, you know, information doesn't change so fast that most of the basics are going to be there for them. And the kids just love encyclopedias. Yeah. So what I recommend to people is get a new set that's a couple years old. You know, it's a brand new set, but it's slightly outdated from the World Book website. half the price, really good buy. Or look for a, you know, 10-year-old set that you might be able to get for $100 or $200. And make that their Christmas gift one year collectively. These kids, this is what we're getting for Christmas this year, or this is what we're, you know, making our major year's school expense this year, because they will spend hours and hours in your encyclopedias. It's just the best investment you could ever make for just the acquisition of knowledge and the fostering of interest.
Okay.
Right? Because the information is so direct. It's alphabetical. You want to look up, you know, why the sky is blue, you look up sky. You know, you want to look up, you know, who were the major players or what the timetable of the Middle Ages was, you just look up Middle Ages and you know, it's just right there. And then the information is presented in such a way that you're just getting very cursory information in the first paragraph or two, and then deeper and deeper and deeper. And the encyclopedia is also going to point you to other articles of interest. So if you're interested in weaponry, it's going to say there's a whole article on medieval weaponry over in, you know, in this article in the encyclopedia. So just, you know, we replaced our first set. I think I had our first set I bought when my oldest daughter was 4, and then we replaced it, I think, 18 years later.
Okay.
We probably didn't need to replace it, but we did. And I was going to sell the set. We use our encyclopedias so much. We actually just moved the old set into the living room and keep the new set in, you know, in our school area where we do our reading all the time. So, yeah. So,
well, now I'm going to have to, I'm going to have to hop on and buy them before everybody else that listens.
Yeah. Sometimes I've had somebody a couple times tell me that on Black Friday, World Book has their like couple years old sets even marked off another $100 less.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So something to keep an eye out.
Hmm.
Maybe there's a big COVID sale going on. I don't know.
that's a great tip. I'm going to have to see about funding that. I love books.
I know. The best. Yeah.
Did you hear about the, what's her name? She had a Netflix show where it was all about purging things. Maria Kondo.
Oh, Marie Kondo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there was so much flack about purging down to 20 books or something like that.
Yeah. No, I know. That's when I did not watch it. I thought if she's going to say to get rid of books, that brings me joy. So.
Yeah. Even those books you're not going to read.
Right. Right. Someday, just flip through them.
One of these days, I'll kick my family out and I'll do our podcast in front of my bookshelf in our living room.
Please do. I saw that with your talk, and oh man,
yeah,
I'm envious of that.
Yeah, that was kind of a big deal to put that in. But you know, we'd always had like that entire wall full of IKEA bookshelves, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought, when we put that addition on, I thought, no, I think built-in bookshelves are the way to go with this family. So
yeah, it's beautiful.
Thanks. So just going to remind people to that we're here on this podcast. We're also on YouTube. So the same podcast, only on video on YouTube. And there's something else I'm supposed to remind people of at the end of the show. What is it?
We are just to keep an ear out and eye out for live event.
Yes, for a live event coming up. And we will, this our release date is on Mondays. And please submit your questions. You can submit them via Facebook Messenger or on my page, Make Joy Normal, or to me personally on my page, Bonnie Landry, via Instagram or via email. You can get that on my website. So any way your questions come, we can tackle them. And thank you all for who submitted questions. Some of the questions will be combined as well. So if we get similar questions, we'll combine them.
Right.
Just for expediency.
And let us know if you want a shout out.
Okay. God bless. Bye, Elizabeth.
Bye.